Good morning, everyone. This morning we are in Isaiah chapter 41. You know, I'm really grateful for the strategy of slowing down and taking in God's word and, you know, going through a book of the Bible like this and studying it. You know, maybe like you, you've read Isaiah before or an Old Testament book. And I tell you what, if you just popped into, you know, Isaiah 41 and didn't know the scene and setting, be very hard to understand what is going on here. And, you know, as a result of slowing down and going through it the way we are, we're going to have so much better understanding. Well, what's happening here is that Isaiah is prophesying about a time when God's people are going to be in Babylon, and, you know, they're not going to be thrilled about it because they lost their country and they're going to be in a foreign land. And they're kind of like wondering where God is. But what Isaiah is doing to comfort them in this time is he's saying, you know, these Babylonians who currently are ruling and reigning over you, I'm going to raise up another nation, the Persian Empire, in a king by the name of Cyrus, and pretty soon I'm going to allow him to come in, and he's going to defeat Babylon. And although Cyrus himself is not going to be a believer in Yahweh, the Persians were much more supportive of the Jewish people to be able to return to worship Yahweh. And, you know, through Cyrus's leadership, the Jews were allowed to return to Jerusalem and not have a country, but at least be able to rebuild their temple and worship at that temple. And what is being told prophetically to the people who are in Babylon is that, you know what, I'm going to bring an army, and that army is going to come and it's going to defeat the one that now has enslaved you. And that's what's being talked about here in chapter 41. Coastlands, listen to me in silence, and let the peoples gain new power. Let them come forward and let them speak. Let us draw near together for judgment. Who has awakened one from the east? And this is what he's talking about, is the Persian Empire that he's awakening to come in from the east and from the north, as we'll see a little bit later. And they're going to come in and ultimately overthrow Babylon, whom he calls. See, God is calling in righteousness to his feet. Now, again, it's not that Cyrus was righteous in the sense that we today are righteous through faith in Jesus, but he was God's instrument to bring about destruction of Babylon and to help his people Israel. He gives up nations before him. He has dominion over kings. You know, God is supernaturally working over these kingdoms to bring about what he wants to bring about. He makes them like dust with his sword and the wind-driven chaff with his bow. He pursues them, passing on in peace, by a way he had not come with his feet. Who has worked and done it, calling forth the generations from the beginning? I, Yahweh, am the first and with the last. You know, I'm the Alpha and the Omega. You know, I am he. He is the one that brings this all about. The coastlands have seen and are afraid. Now, what he's talking about is, you know what? The people of Babylon and the neighboring nations, when they see King Cyrus and the Persians come in, they're indeed going to be afraid. The coastlands have seen and are afraid. The ends of the earth tremble. They have drawn near and have come. Each one helps his neighbor and says to his brother, be strong. So the craftsman strengthens the smelter, and he who smooths metal with the hammer strengthens him who beats the anvil, saying of the soldering, it is good, and he strengthens it with nails so that it will not be shaken. So they think that, you know, rallying together, that maybe they can overcome this Persian Empire that's coming in, but it's not going to work. But what he's going to say that now in verse 8 is, but you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, seed of Abraham, my friend, you whom I have strongly taken hold of from the ends of the earth and called from its remotest parts and said to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you and not rejected you. And imagine the hope that that would give the people who were in Babylon and had lost their country. God still has not forgotten about them. Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God, and I will make you mighty. Surely I will help you. Surely I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. What a great word. God is still for his people. Behold, all those who are angered at you will be shamed and dishonored. Those who contend with you will be as nothing and will perish. You will seek those who quarrel with you, but you will not find them." Now, this is, you know, interesting, where Isaiah seems to be talking about a grand day where Israel's not going to have enemies. And, you know, that really has never existed. You know, it didn't exist then. They didn't get their country back fully. And, you know, even in Jesus' day, as you know, I mean, the Roman Empire was in charge. Israel didn't even have a country. And, well, now they have a country again. But yet, yeah, they have quarrels all the time, right? So it appears what Isaiah is referring to is a messianic blessing of one day when Jesus comes to defeat his enemies and brings in this time of peace and prosperity for all those who recognize the Messiah, including Jews in Israel who recognize him. "You will seek those who quarrel with you, but you will not find them. Those who war with you will be as nothing and non-existent," because they're all going to be defeated. "For I am Yahweh your God, who strongly takes hold of your right hand, who says to you, 'Do not fear, for I will help you. Do not fear, you worm of Jacob.'" Now, that's because they're small and they don't have a lot of power. "You men of Israel, I will help you, declares Yahweh, and your Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel." And I definitely believe that's a sign of Jesus right there, the one who's going to come to redeem. And he's the one who's going to come back and set up this millennial kingdom and destroy the enemies and bring this time of blessing to Jerusalem. "Behold, I have made you a new sharp threshing sledge with double edges. You will thresh the mountains and pulverize them, and you will make the hills like chaff, and you will winnow them, and the wind will carry them away, and the storm will scatter them, but you will rejoice in Yahweh. You will boast in the Holy One of Israel." And we've done this in the recent teachings and earlier chapters of Isaiah, where I've taken you to like Revelation 19, 20, and we've seen that season come upon the earth, and that very much appears what Isaiah is prophesying about. "The afflicted and needy are seeking water, but there is none, and their tongue is parched with thirst. I, Yahweh, will answer them myself. As the God of Israel, I will not forsake them. I will open rivers on the bare heights and springs in the midst of the valleys, and I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry lands fountains of water. And I will put the cedar in the wilderness, the acacia and the myrtle and the olive tree. I will place the juniper in the desert, together with the box tree and the cypress, that they may see and know and establish and gain insight as well, that the hand of Yahweh has done this and the Holy One of Israel has created it." Now, you know, I am sitting here with my coffee right now, and, you know, I'm maybe a little bit thirsty. I don't have any water right next to me right now, and I might need some water. Well, when I do, I'm just going to go over to the kitchen and go over to the refrigerator, and, you know, there's going to be water that's going to, filtered water that's going to come out of that refrigerator, you know, really easy, right? And I'll enjoy water. Well, back in that day, fresh, clear water was massive. And, you know, we hear Jesus talking about that he's the living water, right? Well, this is something special to hear about a land that one day will have really great, clear, fresh water that's providing for the people. Again, we just don't fully appreciate it because of the ease at which we, most of us nowadays, have water. But listen to what it says. And I think there will be great water in the millennium, but even in the new heavens and the new earth, listen to what it says here. "Then he showed me a river." This is Revelation 22, by the way, verse 1. "Then he showed me a river of the water of life, bright as crystal, coming from the throne of God and of the Lamb," that's Jesus, "in the middle of its street. On either side of the river was the tree of life, bearing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for healing of the nations. And there will no longer be any curse. And the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in it." How about that? So, you know, you can see what Isaiah is prophesying about here. God's going to bring about a grand land and grand water and a wonderful and beautiful time. All right, verse 21. "Bring near your case," Yahweh says. "Bring forward your mighty arguments," the King of Jacob says. Now, this is, it appears he's speaking to the people now of Babylon, and he's going to kind of condemn them for the fact that they really don't follow Yahweh. Let them bring it forth and declare it to us what is going to take place. Meaning, can they predict the future? Do you think Babylon understands the future the way that God understands the future? As for the former events, declare what they were. You tell me, he's saying, are you as smart as I, that we may establish our heart on them and know their outcome, or cause us to hear of what is coming? Hey, can you predict the future like God, Babylon? Declare the things that are to come afterward, that we may know that you are, see, lowercase gods. You tell us, Babylon, if you can predict the future like I can, indeed do good or evil, that we may anxiously look about us and fear together. But really what God is saying, he's really mocking them. Isaiah and God are mocking Babylon at this point. And now what it's saying in verse 24 is, behold, you are nothing, and your work is non-existent. He who chooses you is an abomination. I have awakened one from the north. And again, we believe this is, even though Cyrus and the Persian Empire were from the east, apparently when they attacked Babylon, they attacked from the north. I have awakened one from the north, and he has come. From the rising of the sun he will call on my name, and he will come upon officials as upon mortar, even as the potter treads clay. Who has declared this from the beginning that we may know? God has. That's what he's saying. See, God is telling you ahead of time. You should really trust in Yahweh, because he's the one who's telling you ahead of time what's going to happen. Or the former things that we may say, he is right. Surely there was no one who declared. Surely there was no one who caused these words to be heard. Surely there was no one who heard your words. They couldn't predict like God can. Formerly I said to Zion, behold, here they are, and to Jerusalem I will give a messenger of good news. But I look, and there is no one, and there is no counselor among them, who, if I ask, can respond with a word. Babylon, you have no answer for this, and you aren't able to see that it's coming. Behold, all of them are false. Their work are non-existent. Their molten images are wind and utter formlessness. The gods of Babylon that you are now living among, and the people who have false worship, they don't have an understanding of what's going to happen in the future like I'm telling you. I, Isaiah, through God, and I'm telling you the future because I love you, and you're going to see that Yahweh comes good on his word, while Babylon's going to turn to their own molten images, and they're going to hear nothing. But you will hear from Yahweh, and he will bring about what he's going to bring about. So this was a comforting word to the people that were in Babylon, that one day God was going to bring someone from the Persian Empire to overthrow the Babylonians, and even beyond that, that one day God is going to restore Jerusalem. So may we be encouraged. You know, when we think about this, and although it's an encouraging word, you know, they went through a hard time. I mean, they were in captivity in Babylon for 70 years. So this was meant to strengthen the people who are going through a hard time and to remember that God is still real. So I guess I think what we have to think about is that, okay, these are great promises, and God did bring them about, and God is a promise-keeping God, and we have a lot to look forward to in our future, as they had a lot to look forward to in their future, that God was going to, through the Persian Empire, defeat Babylon and let them go back and worship. But listen, a lot of people died. A lot of people never made it out of Babylon. 70 years, a whole generation of people dies out in Babylon, and they never got to go back to the promised land and worship at their temple, but God was still God. So the point is even when we're suffering, even when we're going through a hard time, even when life temporarily is not going well here, and maybe that temporary time lasts a long time, but one day we will be rewarded, as God is going to reward Jerusalem and one day restore and have a river coming from the city. You know, God has a plan for us, and we can trust that there is going to be a bright future. Sometimes it's going to be on earth, but it's for surely going to be in the life to come, and that is meant to give us hope no matter what we're going through here on earth. God bless you all.